That's what you got to do. Hey, there we go.
Clark, that was not your fault. That was mine. Sorry about that. All right. Yeah, today we are going to finish up chapter 1 of James. We are in God's Word. We are learning from what He has taught us. And today we will finish up the last two verses of James. From here on out, we'll go probably a little bit faster because the sections of Scripture in James here are going to be a little bit bigger sections. And so that'll be nice. But for today, we get to talk about these last two verses. So last week we talked about the verses previous, and in those they said that we are not supposed to just be hearers of the word who delude themselves, but actually doers, those that go and actually do what the Bible tells us to do. So we don't just go and listen to the word, we don't just hear it and then go away and not do anything with that, not be changed at all, but rather we listen to what God has to say for us, and then we actually do it. We follow through with that. We are doers of the word rather than hearers. So today the main topic is true religion versus false religion. True religion, what does God actually want us to do with our religious lives? What makes that true versus a false religion? Maybe looking like Christianity, looking like we're following after God, but not actually doing that. So that's what we're going to talk about. Here are the verses. We are in James chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. You can follow along. You've got Bibles in your pews in front of you. It says this: if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. All right, so let's start to unpack this here. If anyone thinks himself to be religious, this is the way it starts out. If someone thinks that they are a religious person, I'm a good person, I'm doing these correct things religiously. Let's look at that. Have you ever seen somebody that thinks that they're pretty religious and they're pretty proud of it? Ever seen somebody like that? I have, I know I have. The telltale sign that you have one of these people is that they're prideful. You can just sense the pride oozing off of this person. And hey, if your religion makes you proud, you're not practicing Christianity, okay? If you're proud because of your religion, you're missing the point. And let me explain that a little bit. You ought to be proud of Christ. That's true. Right, we should be totally, completely, infinitely proud of who Christ is. But you should be humble if you're a Christian. If you are religious, Christian-wise, if you're following Christianity, that should make you humble that you were saved, that you were given the truth, that God revealed it to you, that you were a sinner, and that you've now been saved through your faith, through the grace that God has given us, right? We should be humbled by that. Don't use Christianity to be prideful about yourself or to compare yourself to other people. Oh, I'm so glad that I'm so proud that I'm a Christian, right? It oftentimes ends up sounding a lot like, I'm proud to be an American, right? I'm proud to be a Texan. And if you know those people that talk that way, they're really proud of it. They really mean that. Well, are you proud to be a Christian? You should be humble. You should be the opposite of that. If you're using that to make yourself prideful, if you're using Christianity to make yourself prideful, you're totally missing the point. You can be proud of Christ, absolutely. But the better statement is, I am humbled to be a Christian. I get no benefit. I get no pride from me being saved by God and what He has done for me. I'm humble. So, I'm wrong if I say I'm proud to be a pastor. That's a problem for me. I should be humbled to be a pastor. I should be humbled that I'm in this place. So, a couple years down the line, if you see me and you ask me, hey, are you proud to be a pastor? And if I say yes, you have every right to scold me and tell me, no, you're supposed to be humbled that you're in this spot. Remember, don't get prideful. Don't do that. Just be gentle with me, okay? Just be gentle if I mess that up. Hopefully I'll pass the test, but if not, just be gentle, okay? So if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart. Bridle, that has the idea of to hold in check, to control. This is the bit that you put in a horse's mouth, right? And that's the way you steer the horse. That's the way you control it. If you are unable to bridle your tongue, what you say, your religion is worthless. So when it says not able to bridle your tongue, does that mean you're not supposed to be talkative? No, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to be able to say what you're trying to say, but it never comes out that way. No, that's not what it's talking about. What it's talking about when you're not able to bridle your tongue is that when there's conflict, you spew hate. It just comes out of your mouth. What comes out is cursing, negative things, hurtful things. That's what it means. That's what we're talking about. If you are unable to bridle your tongue, to control what you say, when you are in conflict and it comes out hurtful, that is what we're talking about. How do I know that? Number one, that's the context. Conflict is one of the main contexts that we're talking about in James. It comes up over and over and over again. So whenever we're talking about conflict here, this is what he talks about all throughout James. The other reason we know that is because, as we talked about earlier, chapter 1 gives us, here's your introduction to what we're going to talk about. And he gives you all these different items. And then there's a corresponding section later on in the book that is going to go into more detail. Well, in this case, James chapter 3 is our corresponding text for this part. And you know what the context is there? Conflict. It's all about conflict. It gave you multiple verses talking about conflict and how you speak when you're in conflict. So, the Christian controls his or her tongue when they're in conflict. Recall with me when Christ got into conflict. Did he have a tongue that just spewed stuff, just whatever came to his mind? Just no control, no restraint, or did he actually have control of himself? Did he restrain what he said? Was he choosy in what words he said and how he said them and the way he said them? Absolutely. He's on trial. He has every right to defend himself. And he chooses for the better option to keep silent, to be quiet, to not talk, to not spew, to not throw curses out. He has complete control of his tongue. Now, does that mean that you don't ever say anything of conflict, that you don't ever bring up anything that is challenging somebody or rebuking somebody or correcting somebody? No, absolutely. There are times for that. What there is never a time for is for you to just use your words to hurt somebody else. That's not Christianity. That's not following Christ. That's not being like him. Christ's words that he said were not to hurt. They were to direct and get people to see the truth and get on the right path. All right, if this person thinks himself to be religious but cannot control, bridle their own tongue, he deceives his own heart. Remember this? We have another example here. This is done to yourself. You are deceiving yourself if you think you're religious, but you can't bridle your tongue. This is done to you. Remember in verse 13 through 17, it says, do not be deceived, right? We've talked about all these lies and all these different things that you can believe that are false, that are going to send you down the wrong path. And in verse 22 through 25, it says something exactly the same. And do not merely be hearers who delude themselves. Right? Again, we're talking about these are things that will delude yourself. You are doing the delusion to yourself. You are lying to yourself. So, let's be on the truth. Let's tell the truth. So, what we found so far in James, here are a few things, a few ways that he said you can delude yourself. You can tell yourself a total lie. Number one, you're deluding yourself if you think God is tempting you. Number two, you're deluding yourself if you think something good has originated from somewhere other than God. You're deluding yourself. That's a lie. Number three, you're deluding yourself if you think you are safe simply because you've heard God's word. That was last week, right? Oh, I've heard God's word. I've gone to Bible school. I've gone to church every Sunday. I hear God's word. If you're not doing it, you're actually not safe. And that's what we talked about last time. Number four, you are deluding yourself if you think you are safe because you are religious in other ways, but you cannot actually control your tongue. Ugh, yikes. You're actually not safe if you have all these other religious things that you're doing, but you can't bridle your tongue. So says James. In fact, it says this man's religion is worthless, empty, fruitless, useless, powerless. That's what your religion is if you can't bridle your tongue. The good religious deeds that you're doing are just nullified. They don't count towards you actually being true. All right, so quick question. Step aside for a second. Does that seem a little extreme to you? That seem a little harsh? Like, if I can't control my tongue, it means that the rest doesn't really matter? That's a sign that I'm not actually being a true follower of Christ? Is that a little extreme? To some, it may seem that way. And it may seem like that's a little harsh. That's a little difficult. Here's what he's getting at, though. Behind what he's talking about, behind it are some concepts. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Remember, remember what I talked about last week with my daughter, and she would get that look on her face, and she would look at me or my wife and then just slap us in the face. And then her way of wanting to get around not saying I'm sorry for what I did was to stroke our arm and get those puppy dog eyes and think that that was okay. So, we talked about that last time, right? That there are ways that we can try to pretend like things are okay, that we can smooth things over, all right? Oftentimes, we can use religious deeds to smooth things over and pretend like things are okay. Here's the truth that James is getting at. You're not okay if your tongue is unbridled. You've got a major, major problem. And the tongue's a problem, but it's actually pointing to a deeper problem. And we'll get to that here in a little bit. No amount of good works restores a relationship. You need to have forgiveness asked for and given to have a relationship restored. That's what you need. And you can't just do good works to make all that come back. We talked about that a lot last week. No matter how religious someone is, those acts can never erase the heart that is evil. And this is getting to the unspoken thing that's behind this, okay? Unspoken in this discussion is a concept James received from Jesus' teaching. This is coming straight from Jesus. That is that the way to tell true religion versus false religion is the source and the extension of the religion. These concepts come from just simply a Jewish or Christian context. So we're not talking about can you tell a false religion by looking at this. No, this is, are you a real follower of Judaism in the Old Testament or a real follower of Christ in the New Testament? Is your religion pure or impure? Here's how you find out. First question, what is the source of your religion? Where's it coming from? Your religious deeds, all that you're doing, where's it coming from? What's the source of all that religiosity? Number two, what is the extension of that? In what ways does that come out in actual life? What actions are done because of the religion that you're following? Now, you have two options for your source. Your source can either be coming from love or from hate. That's where it's coming from. The source of your religious fervor, your religious zeal, is either coming from love or hate. You either love God or you hate God. Love is concerned with others. That's what you care about when you love. You love other people. When you hate, you're caring about yourself and only yourself. And your religion is for yourself. This is why pride is such a problem, right? Pride is a huge issue because it directs everything toward yourself. Pride uses religion for yourself, to feed yourself and to feed your ego, to make you feel good. You are utilizing that to feed yourself. Humility, on the other hand, uses religion to extend love and blessing to other people. When you're humble, you want to use your religion to help other people. Pride pulls the blessing of religion into yourself. Humility gives those away.
Here's what's tricky. When you're trying to figure out whether your religion is true and authentic, you're actually following Christ, or if it's not. When things are going well, it's really hard to distinguish between the two. Okay, when things are going well and things are going good, both sides are happy, right? The humble person is happy because they're giving blessing away, right? But so is the prideful person, because those blessings are coming back to them. And so in both cases, they both look happy. They both look excited. However, you can easily tell the difference between the two when there's a conflict. When there's a conflict, that's when things look different. In a conflict, the tongue of the humble gives blessing. They are seeking reconciliation. But the prideful, when there's a conflict, they're doing the opposite. They are spewing cursing. This is what we're talking about, not bridling your tongue. The extension there is the source. Is it love or is it hate? How is it expressing itself? Is it expressing itself in love and words that are humble and seeking reconciliation in this conflict? Or is it seeking to hurt, to punish, to bring pain and inflict that upon someone else? The heart of love is reconciliation. Hate brings curse, namely the desire to harm. You ever had that? You ever interacted with somebody where their desire was with their words to harm you, to wound you, to strike you down? I've had that. It's not fun. And I don't feel like reconciling with them when they do that, right? It doesn't foster, let's be friends here. It fosters, no, let's fight. Here's the thing. You can hide your hate and your evil in a cloak of religious zeal. But your tongue gives you away. We can pretend that everything's good and I'm this religious person and I love Jesus and all this stuff, right? We can pretend that. We can mask it by doing all sorts of stuff that looks religious. The giveaway to your heart and where you actually are is your tongue in a conflict. It's a dead giveaway. We know exactly where you are, all right? So what he's saying here is, look, it doesn't matter if you look religious on the outside. If when there's a conflict, you start hurting people, that's a good indication that that source of your religion is actually yourself. Hate. That's where that's coming from. That's why this is worthless, right? The tongue is telling you what your heart actually is. The Pharisees were this way, if you think about it. They looked good on the outside, but they were hate-filled on the inside. Jesus totally saw through their facade. He was like, come on, guys, seriously? You guys are doing all this stuff to try to look good, and your heart is as black as can be. You guys don't love us. Jesus warned in Matthew 7 that they were wolves in sheep's clothing. You guys remember that passage? Watch out for the Pharisees. They are wolves in sheep's clothing. And you would know the true people of God, this is what Jesus said, by their fruit. The good ones give good fruit. The bad ones give bad fruit. The actions, the things, the extension of your religion. What comes out, if it's a good source, is good things. If it's a bad source, bad things. James likewise warns us to watch out for those who appear religious on the outside, but cannot control their tongue, revealing their true heart of hatred on the inside. So we're supposed to watch out for that. And if we have that in our congregation, we need to weed that out. Not saying we're weeding you out, we're just saying we need to correct that and get you a heart that actually loves God. And that's what we're working for. That's what we're going for. And that applies for me too if I ever get to that place. If I ever get to the place where I'm coming from hatred and I'm hurting people in the way that I talk, that needs to be eradicated. And that's coming for me too. Matthew said this in 15, Matthew 15. I'm sorry, Jesus said in Matthew 15, verses 17 through 20, do you not understand that everything goes into the mouth, passes into the... So he's having a conversation with what is clean and what is unclean about eating food. It's a technicality with the Old Testament law. Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth, everything that you eat, passes into the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. The things that come out of your mouth, they're coming from your heart, and that's what defiles you. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man. All right, so what he's saying is, when you have a heart that is filled with hate, that is prideful and not giving in to God, what comes out is evil stuff. And James is picking that idea up and saying, when you spew out of your mouth hate, we know where you're coming from. We know where your heart is. He's going to say something similar in Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 through 37. He's talking to the Pharisees. He says this. Here we go. You brood of vipers. Okay, here's an example where Jesus isn't going for the nice one. He's not going to hurt. He's trying to tell them, this is the truth. You're a brood of vipers, and you need to correct yourself. How can you, being evil, speak what is good? You're evil. Like, your heart is wrong. How can you say anything that's good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for in the day of judgment. For by your words, here you go, by your words you will be justified if you have a good heart and say good words, and by your words you will be condemned. That's if you have a hateful heart that spews hate. We will be justified, in other words, shown authentic. We'll be shown that our faith is authentic by our loving words, if we're faithful, or we'll be condemned, shown inauthentic. We don't have an authentic life with Christ by the hateful words that we say. When love is the source, God is in control, right? He is controlling us, and he's preventing our flesh from spewing hate. We see this in Psalm 141, verse 3. He says this. The psalmist says, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. God, please protect me from spewing the stuff that's in my fleshly heart that's evil. God, protect me from hurting other people with what I say. You guard my heart. You prevent me from spewing these things out. All right. So that's the first verse that we're talking about. Now, let's jump to the next verse. So, we talked about this man's religion is worthless, but let's get the positive. What's the positive here? Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this. He's going to have two parts to this, two things that are there. Number one, to visit orphans and widows in their distress. That's the first part of a pure and undefiled religion. You may be aware of this, but if you were not, care of orphans and widows is all throughout the scriptures. Old Testament, New Testament, Gospels, Acts, the Epistles, it's everywhere. This is what you're supposed to do. The people of God do this. They take care of orphans and widows. Let's look at one example here. Deuteronomy 24, 17 through 21. This is part of Moses talking to the people of Israel. You shall not pervert the justice due an alien or an orphan, nor take a widow's garment in pledge, but you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and that the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I am commanding you to do this thing. When you reap your harvest, all right, so when they have a harvest, in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. God will bless those that leave food for the orphans and widows and aliens, that take care of people that cannot take care of themselves. When you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not go over it again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, for the widow. In other words, don't try to grab all of your harvest. Actually, intentionally leave some there so that people that need it can use it. We saw this in the verse in Isaiah that we quoted last time. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. Back in this context, orphans and widows were almost as good as dead. Like, when you had a society where everyone is just trying to survive, which you had in the ancient world, outside of a few people that are taking the whole country's wealth and using it for their own good, if you're just a regular person, and if you become an orphan or a widow, no one's protecting you. And there's not just grocery stores that you can go get food. You're helpless. You are in trouble. And God says, Israel, you need to protect those people. You need to take care of them and give them what they need to survive. That's what we need to do. True love is like Christ, taking care of those that need it most. If you recall your state and my state spiritually, we were sinners. We were enemies of God. And God said, I'm going to die for them. I'm going to sacrifice myself for them who need everything. He had everything. What did he do with it? He sacrificed it to give it to us so that we would be able to survive. That's the way Christ is. And so to follow Christ, we need to be the same. Who are the ones in our society and in our community that need the most? I don't want answers, but I want you to think about that in your seat. Think about it. Who are the people in our society that need the most? Widows and orphans, obviously, oftentimes have great, huge, enormous needs. But there's other people as well. There's other groups and individuals that you know or know of that really, really need help. And that we can provide for them. So think about that for a second. I'll give you a few seconds. Think about who are the people in our community or even in your life that you know that really need help. Take a few seconds. Think about that. Those are the people that we need to be going after, that we need to provide for. If our religion is true, if we're really following Christ, that's what we're doing. We're going and finding those people and meeting needs. Now, a word of caution. Let's be careful how we perform our service. Let's be careful how we meet needs, right? Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. Right? He says, if you're going out and doing your religious deeds, you're serving other people, meeting needs, so that you get something in return, you have your reward. You get whatever you thought you would get. That's your reward. You don't get anything extra from Jesus. Right? We're supposed to do things for other people without expecting anything in return. And we're certainly not trying to impress others with our service, right? That's prideful. That's for us. That's me serving you so that I get something. That's not love. That's selfishness. There's also another temptation that we got to look out for. It's very tempting to serve people that can give us something in return. So if you give something to someone and you know you're going to get something back from them, that's not really loving them. That's not true love. It's fantastic if you get something, but if you weren't expecting it, that's the way to go about it. That's okay. That's great. But if you're giving intentionally because they're going to give you something back, that's being prideful. Jesus said this in Luke 6, verses 32 through 35. This is what this is about. There's a whole bunch of people in this world that act and do things the way that they regularly do it. But they're totally acting out in the flesh. One of the things that everybody does is they barter and they trade with other people. And the sum result of all of that is the chaos that we see in our lives, right? In our world, we do not have the peace that we've been seeking. Okay? So, if we're going to get that peace, if we're going to have that peace act out, we got to do something more than just what everybody else is doing. So this is what Jesus says to that. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. Here's what we do different. Everybody's doing that stuff. Everybody's giving so that they get back. And it's not giving us the peace that we need. You want to know what gives us the peace that we really want? Here it is. Next verse. But love your enemies. And do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he himself, get this, this is all coming from God. We are told to be like who God is. All right? So he's not telling you to do stuff that he hasn't already done. This is what he says about himself. This is what God says about himself. For he himself, God, is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Have you ever thought about that? That God is kind to evil and ungrateful men. Praise the Lord for that, because all of us were that. Right? All of us were that. And if we didn't have somebody that was kind and generous to us, there's no way we get saved. There's no way. So, who are we supposed to be like? We're supposed to be like Christ. What was he like? Kind to ungrateful and evil men. He goes and loves his enemy. We need to go and love our enemy. We need to give to those who cannot give back to us. What sets Christians apart is the willingness and even the desire to serve those that give nothing in return. That's true Christianity. So, if you feel repulsed to offer something to someone because you won't get anything in return, then you're not living like Christ. That's the flesh. Right? So if you're repulsed because you're not going to get anything in return, that's a good indication that you're following the flesh. Now, I hit on this a lot because next week, it ties so right into next week. So the next chapter, what James talks about next, ties really, really close to that. All right, so that was the first one. So take care of orphans and widows. Second thing that tells you if you have a pure, undefiled religion is this, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. We are supposed to stay away from sin. This world is unclean, right? We're to live here but remain unstained, untainted by the world. This means you live a holy and obedient life. This is all throughout the scriptures. Here's a few examples. Leviticus 19:2. Speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy. We are emulating Christ. We are imitating who God is. So if he's holy, we need to be holy. Matthew 5:48. Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Earlier, it says this. Here's the idea. Here's where it's coming from. Why do we need to be perfect? Why is it so important that we're holy? Why is it so important that we're unstained by sin? Why is that so important? Matthew 5:15-16. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. We are naturally not aligned with God. We naturally don't see who he is. And if anyone's going to see it, we have to actually look like him. And to look like him, you have to be like him. You have to do what he does. There will be no mass blessing for this earth, for this community, for you and your life, if we're being disobedient to what God has told us to do. If we're not being like who he is. Okay? And there's lost people out there, ungrateful, evil men that need to hear the truth. They need to hear from us that there's salvation that's offered to them. Your sin can be paid for by Christ, and you can live eternally with him forever. That message doesn't get through if we're evil. That message doesn't get through if we look just like everybody else. So we need to be unstained by the world that we live in. Jesus wants us to be authentic Christians, not pretenders who delude themselves. I don't want you guys coming here, and just from the fact that you're here, I don't want you to feel like, oh, I'm safe just because I came to church or I've been reading the Bible. Well, here's how you're safe. You're safe if your heart is clean, okay? If your heart is faithful to the Lord, that's how you're safe. We can mask that and put all sorts of actions around that that look like it, but the true tell is your heart, all right? So I want you to be able to look at your life and say, all right, forget all the external stuff. What is my heart? Is my heart faithful to the Lord or is it not? Do I love the Lord or do I not? That's the real question. And if you need help along that road, if you're finding, I actually don't love the Lord fully, I want to grow in that, or I actually don't love the Lord, I'm not faithful, I do all these things that look good, but actually deep down I know my heart's not right, I would love to speak to you. Our elders would love to speak to you. We would love to help you along that road. We're here for you. We want to talk to you. We want to be able to help you along that road. So whatever we can do, let us know. We're here for you. This is the most important thing that you could ever do, is to examine your heart and see where you really are. Don't delude yourself. This country is filled with deluded people who think that they go to church on Sundays and they're safe, and they're really not. And I hate that fact, but it's a fact. So we have to deal with it. Please do not be someone who deludes themselves. All right? All right. Those were our verses. Now, we talked about helping those that are in need, and we had you think about, hey, who are the people that really are in need, and who could we help? Well, this is something that the church has done forever. This is what God called the Israelites to do. It's what Christ has called the church to do, and this is what we do. We want to be able to meet needs and take care of you all. So we have our deacon board, the deacons here. One of their main roles is actually to take care of the needs that are in our church. So we're going to do an activity here. We're going to pass out a piece of paper that has some info on it. Not some info, but for you to fill out. And it has two sections. So the two sections on top, it's what are your needs? What are the needs that you have? And we want you to tell us kind of what degree of need it is. So if it's an urgent need, like something very, very serious and we really need some help, someone's sick, finances are in dire straits and we're not going to pay our bills, things like that, that's the most urgent. And then there's other needs that are important, but they're not to that level, but you still would like help with that, put that down. Or, hey, I would just like something and this would be nice to get from the church. That'd be excellent. Here's what we don't want, right? We're not playing Big Brother here. We're not trying to grab information from you for this. This is for you to tell us, to communicate to us, I want help with this, and I could use help with this. I'm not promising that we're able to take care of all of our needs or we're going to be able to meet all of our needs, but we're going to do our best and we're going to try. So this is for you to tell us and communicate with us what your needs are. And then on the bottom, then it's also the flip side of that. So what can you provide? What can you give? So what interests do you have? What abilities do you have? What resources do you have that you would be willing to let us use to help us along or help somebody else that has a need? So what we're going to do is we're going to collect all these after you're done, and we're going to give that to the deacons. And the deacons, eventually, this is going to be a long process. We're not like, boom, tomorrow, everything's fixed. We're getting started on being very organized in how we do this. But down the road, we're going to start contacting you and then trying to be able to meet those needs and then utilize you as well for the needs of our congregation. Now, there is an option on there to be anonymous. And what that means is it will go to the elders and I. Right now, Tim and Chris are out, but Steve and I will be here. So we will collect, and we will be the only ones that collect all of these after we're done. And we're the only ones that will see the ones that are anonymous. If you don't want it to be anonymous, then it's going to go to the deacons, and the deacons will be finding some people that will be able to try to help us come up with ways to provide for your needs. But again, if you want this to be anonymous, it's just going to be the elders that see it, and we're going to try to get in contact with you to be able to work with you and find ways that we can anonymously meet those needs. So let's take a good 5, 6, 7 minutes, and then when you're done. Bobby, yes. Yeah, if you don't have one yet, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll have some more coming here. Yeah, we got some more copies we got to make, so go ahead and put your hands down but when Bobby comes back. For the rest of you, go ahead and get started on that. Again, no obligation, but this is just to help us better meet your needs.